Hey guys, I'm your host Tara A. Devlin, and welcome to this week's episode of Kawabana, true Japanese scary stories from around the internet. Before we get started this week, just a quick note to let everyone know that Bankai, Baffling Japanese Internet Mysteries Volume 3, is now out. If you enjoy the particular mysteries that only the internet can offer, then do head over and check it out right now. In fact, some of the stories from this week's episode even feature in it, but more on that later. We also have a brand new design up in the Kawabana merchandise store. You can check that out at kawabana.store. We have shirts, mugs, stickers, masks, and much more, so do check it out and help support the show at the same time. This week, we're taking a look at some tales of bizarre creatures to thrill and chill you this hot summer. Or cold winter, depending on where you are. First up, a woman keeps having dreams that seem to be prophetic, but then she finds herself seemingly locked in a dream within a dream within a dream. And something is hunting her through them all. What does it want? Find out in That Woman. Prophetic dreams and dreams that come true really do exist, huh? I often have dreams just like this. I've had them for as long as I can remember, and it's only those dreams that I become super curious about after the fact. They're so oddly real, these suspicious dreams. This year I've had the same dream over and over where my teeth fall out, and the taste of blood and sensation of flesh was so real that I had to look up dream fortune telling to see what it might mean. Apparently it was a prediction that a close relative of mine would soon die. I also had a dream where my sister died, and it was so real that I woke up crying. When I looked that one up, it was, apparently, a prediction that someone close to that person would die in real life. Considering both that and the dream about teeth, I thought that maybe someone close to me might die soon. Before long, my grandmother passed away. Then in March, I had another dream where a friend died and I woke up crying. I couldn't believe it, considering what happened with the other dreams, but I was supposed to meet her last month. Then, the day before, she contacted me to let me know that her grandmother died and so we wouldn't be able to meet. I had a different dream where I found something I'd lost long ago and the next day my mother actually found it. And the day after I dreamt about cuddling a black cat, I found one in front of my house. I often had a lot of strange dreams like this in the past, but after starting university, I often had layers of dreams as well. You know, like a dream within a dream. And it's these layered dreams that I'd like to talk about today. I was in this place with numerous bridges in straight lines all around me. Next thing I knew, I was running across them, and even in my dream, I knew that I was running from something. After crossing a long, long bridge, a brand new bridge appeared right before my eyes. Alright, now I have to cross this one or that thing will get me. I was in a rush. But there was an old wooden sign in front of this bridge. The warning on it was so strange. You cannot cross over this bridge unless you die. Stabbing. Right after that, the thing chasing me from behind suddenly stabbed me with some wood or something. Blood. Blood was... it came gushing out of my stomach. So this is the color of blood, I thought, unable to believe my eyes as dark blood continued pouring out of my stomach. That distinctive iron smell from blood wafted all around me. It was so painful, even though it was just a dream. I literally had to open my eyes in order to escape from this nightmare. And then I suddenly woke up. I sighed in relief before I could stop myself. But then the very next moment, I realized something. I was running across a bridge, and as expected, something was chasing me from behind. I ran, desperately trying to escape, and when I crossed over the bridge, I found myself at the next bridge, with a sign in front of it. You cannot cross over this bridge unless you die. Puppet. Puppet? What the hell did that mean? Threads. Countless threads tangled around me. Where on earth did they come from? At first it was kind of ticklish. Then suddenly my pinky finger lifted, and then my middle finger, and then my thumb. Ah, I see. A puppet. Something snapped. First, my pinky finger broke off right in front of me. It danced around in front of me and then pop, pop. My fingers, my arms, my legs, my torso. Like a puppet, they were all lifted up and then dropped to the ground. Then my head followed suit. I suddenly woke up. What on earth was that dream? A puppet? Oh, how creepy. How scary. I thought, as I found myself running again across a long bridge. Ah, I'm still dreaming. Ah, something is chasing me, trying to catch me. When I crossed over the bridge, there was another bridge with a sign. You cannot cross over this bridge unless you die. Gouging. Ah, here we go again. I was stunned with fear and then I heard something behind me. Give them back. It was a woman's thin, sad, and pained voice. Over and over again, something chased and then killed me. Who on earth kept killing me over and over again? It was the first time I questioned that, and I turned around. A woman with no eyes stood there, holding a spoon. Give them back. The fear I felt as she repeated those words was indescribable. I wanted to run, but I couldn't. I couldn't wake from the dream. The woman slowly approached me. The woman with no eyes seemed to look right through me. Ah, I'm going to die again. Just as the woman raised the spoon, I noticed something strange. I knew this woman. She had no eyes, yes, but I knew her. But who was she? I couldn't recall. Right before the spoon went to stab my eye, I woke up. I looked around and I was in my bedroom. This time, I really was awake. I was freed from the dream that felt so realistic and nothing like a dream at all. I sighed in relief and soon realized that I was covered in goosebumps. I finally realized who that woman was. She was me. She was me. The person who stabbed me with the wood, who tore my limbs off with thread, who tried to gouge my eyes out with a spoon. It was all me. Why didn't I realize that sooner? Even setting aside the fact that she didn't have eyes, she looked and sounded just like me. The person who killed me over and over again was me. So then, who was the one being killed? Whose consciousness really was that? Did I kill myself? Or was I not really myself at that time and was someone else entirely? If so, why did I continue killing that person over and over and asking for them to give something back? Give them back. That had been my sad, pained voice, and for a while, I couldn't get it out of my head. It was just like the monkey dream, although I was actually killed in my dream. I don't know if the dream had anything to do with it, but the next day my eyes were infected and I had to wear an eye patch. I'm sure it had nothing to do with it, right? This next story sees a terrified man about to head off to war make a deal with a kitsune for his safety. To his surprise, it works. At least, as long as he holds up his end of the bargain as well. What will happen when he doesn't? Find out in Deal with the Fox. This is a story that my late grandmother told my father, which he then told to me. Towards the end of the war, my grandfather was slippery enough to avoid duty, but then finally it caught up with him and he was ordered to join the fight. Apparently, he didn't think it was the honourable thing to do and was convinced that he wouldn't return alive. And so, night after night, he cried into his alcohol. My grandmother thought he was a cowardly man, and before long she was fed up with him. However, one day he returned home in high spirits and told her that he visited a kitsune in the neighbourhood on a whim, and he heard that kitsune's voice. "If you really don't want to die that much, then I'll do something about it for you. In return, you must come here every day you're free to clean and leave me offerings," the kitsune said. My grandmother was certain that he had lost his mind. However, starting the very next day, my grandfather was a changed person. He was more motivated than ever, and he joined the war with great enthusiasm. My grandmother, who thought that such a cowardly man would never return from the war, had half given up by the time she saw him off. But when the war ended, my grandfather returned. According to him, he almost died several times, but miraculously, he was saved each time and managed to pull through. One incident that stood out in particular was when a fellow soldier whose name he didn't even know continually showed up to pull him out of dangerous situations, and it was the actions of that soldier that saved him. This soldier carried a shogi piece with him at all times, and seeing that, my grandfather made one of his own and carried it with him at all times as well. And so, while his unit was almost completely destroyed, my grandfather was able to safely return home. "That soldier was a kitsune," he said excitedly to my grandmother. "They love shogi." After his return, my grandfather started a business with the little money he had, but things didn't go quite so well. Still, despite things being busy, he never forgot the deal he made with the kitsune and kept up his end of the bargain. When my father, their fourth child, was born, his business started to take off, and in no time at all, my grandfather had amassed a considerable amount of money. However, it was also around this time that he started to neglect his promise and spent more time gambling and chasing women. Because they had invested money in the house, my grandmother simply cried and cried and had to put up with it. Having ignored the kitsune for so long, however, it finally became too much for the creature to bear. It wasn't long until something strange happened. My grandparents' eldest son and daughter both died, one after the other, and then my grandfather fell ill with liver pain as well. Night after night, he suffered nightmares of pain and suffering. "This is the kitsune's curse. You must go in my stead and carry out my end of the deal," he ordered my grandmother. She did as she was told, but she was too late. My grandfather passed away in great pain. The business quickly folded, and my grandmother was left to raise her remaining children alone, with great struggle. However, she continued to fulfill her duties to the kitsune, and the family never suffered misfortune again. Now, my father is the one who keeps up our end of the deal. When I was just a child, he often said to me, "If anything ever happens to me, then you must uphold our end of the deal with the kitsune. If the kitsune hadn't helped us, then neither I nor you would have been born. Never forget that." I plan to wrap up my current job and then return home while my father is still healthy. I'll take over from him and then pass it down to my future children as well. Kudan are strange creatures said to look like cows with human faces that can predict the future with 100% certainty. The grandmother of the young man in this next story apparently saw one when she was a child, but is everything really as she says it was? Find out in It's a Kudan. grandmother was born on an island, a short distance from Honshu, and her family was involved in farming and raising livestock. They mostly raised cows and chickens, which they then sold at the market to make a living. I loved chatting with my grandmother, and we spoke a lot. One of the things that always stood out to me, though, was the reason for why my grandmother disliked chicken meat so much. She said that they sometimes ate their own livestock at home, and they had to do all the preparations themselves. And although she wasn't the one who dealt directly with processing the livestock to turn it into meat, she did happen to see the process take place. One day, when she was still in elementary school, she came home and found nobody was there. She wondered if maybe they were working in the barn, so she went over to have a look. There, she saw her father draining the blood from chickens. He chopped the heads off and then hung them upside down. For my grandmother, who wasn't used to seeing such a thing, it was a horrifying sight that she'd never forget for the rest of her life. Those chickens were supposed to serve as meat for dinner, but when she remembered what she saw, even as an adult, she just couldn't bring herself to eat chicken anymore. It was a shocking experience for her, but in the end, we live by consuming the lives of other animals. She became keenly aware of that and often stressed the importance of life and food to other people. My grandmother had strong maternal instincts and many friends, but not only that, animals loved her as well, and she always had one type of animal or another around the house. "They just wander in and I can't find it in my heart to make them leave," she said. And so she enthusiastically took care of numerous animals. I loved her dearly, but there was one story she told me that I just couldn't believe. It was right around the time my grandmother was about to turn 20, so probably close to a century ago now. Her parents were in the cowshed, waiting for one of the cows to give birth. My grandmother and the other family members were relaxing inside the house when suddenly her father came running towards the house screaming, his face pale. "It's a Kudan!" Everyone hurried over to the shed, and they found the mother slumped on the ground in surprise, staring in the direction of the mother cow. There, they saw a newborn calf, but its face looked exactly like that of a human. They locked down the shed, and only her father was able to go in or out. They didn't have a telephone, so they sent a telegram, and then a few days later, a large group of unknown men showed up and started doing something in the shed. Then, after a chat with her father, they left, just like that. When my grandmother looked in the shed after that, both the mother cow and the Kudan were gone. "Let's sell this land and live somewhere else," her father said, and claimed that they could get quite a good price for it. They had nothing to worry about, and they could start fresh in another place. Everyone was in agreement, and so they left the place where my grandmother was born and started living somewhere else. But surprisingly, my grandmother said that after she saw the Kudan, she discovered she could predict the future. But whenever I asked her to tell me something about the future, she would just say something vague or brush me off entirely. I wanted to believe that she was lying, but every now and then, some well-dressed grown-ups would come and see her. And for some reason, my grandmother was rather wealthy. The Kudan is well known as a yokai that leaves predictions of the future that always come true. I wonder if that ability transferred to my grandmother, who really loved animals. My grandmother and other close relatives have since passed away, but I asked my parents about it while they were still alive. "We've never heard anything like that," was all they said. The story is hard to believe, but I find it hard to believe that my grandmother was lying to me as well. What would you do if you were at school and a warning suddenly played over the speakers school-wide, warning you not to leave your classroom because of a strange occurrence happening outside? That's exactly what happened to the students in this next story, but what's really lurking out there? Find out in The Strange Girl. This is the story of a boy who was in the fifth grade of elementary school at the time. One day, after fourth period had ended, it was time for lunch. But then, suddenly, a broadcast played over the speakers throughout the entire school.
This is a special broadcast. A strange girl was just seen wandering around the third floor of the North School building. If you happen to see her, please be careful not to get involved.
Even now, as an adult, that boy apparently still clearly remembers what was said on that broadcast. And after hearing such a thing, everyone was dumbfounded. What on earth was that just now? As he and his friends speculated on what it could all mean, several teachers entered the room and suddenly started homeroom, explaining the broadcast that had just aired. According to them, a girl who clearly wasn't from the school had been seen wandering around on the third floor of the North School building, and numerous students who had seen her were confused. The reason for that was because this girl happened to disappear whenever a teacher spotted her and then chased after her. Then, the teachers said that they were going to patrol the school grounds, so everyone should sit down and eat their lunch. Then, they left. That was when it happened. They saw a girl hanging out the window of the third floor toilets in the North School building. The situation looked precarious, like she might fall at any moment. "Everyone, stay in the classroom," one of the teachers yelled, and then took off running. Before long, the girl disappeared from the window and the teacher's face became visible behind it. Yet, something seemed terribly wrong, like nobody could believe their eyes. When everyone in the class said they could see the teacher instead, naturally the teacher went pale and returned to the staff room. The next day, a special school assembly was held, and the principal gave a speech asking everyone not to fuss over the pranks. That was the only day that girl ever appeared, and she was never seen again after that. Even now, nobody knows who that girl was or why she appeared that day. The divine is said to reside everywhere in Japan, even in the smallest of puddles. If you want to fill in an old well or pond, then it might be prudent to make sure you follow the appropriate procedures first, as this next story can attest. Find out why in Be Careful Filling in Ponds. They say that if there's an area where pools of water form, then without a doubt, the water kami will come down to inhabit that area too, right? This goes not only for wells, but for ponds too, yeah? And if so, then when you fill in a well or a pond, then you have to hold a ceremony to ask the kami to leave, right? There was a well or a pond or something nearby that they just filled in without doing any of that, and in the end, every single person died. I've heard that if you want to destroy a well, then you have to hold a cleansing ceremony first, give thanks, and then stab a bamboo pipe into the ground where the well once was, so it can continue to breathe. If you simply fill it in as it is, then the kami summer of the well won't be able to breathe. I've even heard that families who didn't put the bamboo pipe in later all got sick and died or went missing. On that note, our well dried up, but we put a pipe in first and then filled it in. My grandmother once told me a story about a family who filled in an artificial pond they made in their garden. But they didn't get a professional to fill it in. Rather, they got an old man they knew who was like a do-it-yourself guy. If it had been a well or something like that, they might have done a more professional job on it. But he was like, "Well, I'm the one who built this, so why can't I fill it in too?" And no matter what anyone said,
he ignored them. Nothing much happened after he filled the pond in, but then about 6 months later, his child suddenly died, followed by his wife, and then the old man himself. This all happened within a year or two, I think. I think his wife died of illness. No, it was an accident, and the old man died of illness. Sorry, I wasn't here when it happened, so I'm not quite sure. According to my grandmother, regardless of the workmanship, if water gathers somewhere, then a water kami will come down and inhabit it. That pond just happened to house Ryujin, the dragon kami, and because they didn't follow proper etiquette, they brought his wrath down upon them. For this next story, the creatures aren't quite as bizarre as they are gross, maybe. It certainly makes my skin crawl. Find out why in Birds in the Attic. My family home was built several decades ago. Even with all the windows and doors closed, it's cold in winter because of a draft coming in from somewhere. But during summer, a cool breeze comes in from the north, making it quite pleasant. The house has also withstood several earthquakes, and although it has suffered a little damage, it's still standing today. So, when I was a high school student, I lived on the second floor of this house. One day, I woke up to the sound of birds crying. Had some chicks just been born? I followed the noise and thought that perhaps a bird had built a nest under the eaves, so I went outside to check, but I couldn't find anything that even vaguely resembled a nest around the house. Birds generally only make such a noisy fuss in the mornings, and it wasn't like they were causing me any harm, so I thought I could just use them as an alarm clock and didn't pay much more attention to it. But before long, I heard not only the sound of birds crying, but what sounded like footsteps as well. And that was when I finally realized that they were living in the attic. I checked outside again to see how the bird might have gotten in there, and there was a vent that was partially broken. That was likely how it got in. The birds would no doubt leave the nest and thus the attic as well sometime soon. I wasn't sure how long that would take, but at any rate, I wasn't sure how to get them out of the attic to begin with, so I decided to leave them alone. Several days passed, and as I was lying in bed one day, I noticed several things moving on the railing above my head. Eh? I thought, and looked closer. There were numerous small bugs crawling around on it. Ugh! I screamed before I could stop myself, and I took another look around my room. There, on my bed, my desk, on my books, my radio, there were tiny bugs about 1 millimeter long, crawling over everything in my room. What the hell? This unexpected sight made me speechless and gave me goosebumps. Especially seeing so many bugs on my bed, the one place in the world that was supposed to be the safest and most relaxing. I blamed myself for not noticing where they came from and how long they had been there. But then I became intrigued as to what type of bugs they were. I decided to take a look with the microscope that I once received as a gift. I grabbed one bug with some tweezers, put it between the glass slides, and then looked at it through the microscope. When I saw the close-up of the bug, I trembled for a moment, and looking closer, I realized it looked familiar. It was a mite. The internet wasn't common at the time, so I couldn't look up what type of mite it was, but when I looked into it later, it was a northern fowl mite. And after discussing with my family where they might have come from, we turned our suspicions to the birds in the attic. The roof was made of boards with gaps in between, so it would be no doubt easy for the mites to pass through there. After that, our response was swift. We arranged for a professional to remove the birds and repair the roof, and then fix the ventilation they came in through. Work started just a few days later. They changed the roof, fixed the ventilation, and measures were taken to prevent the birds from re-entering the house. Fortunately, the birds had already left the nest, so there was no reason to kill them. But they did indeed have a nest up there. The contractor told us that mites are parasitic on wild birds, so they likely drop down through the gaps in the roof because of them. These mites were also known to bite people, so I was lucky that I got away unharmed. Once everything was finished, our whole family cleaned the room. Since we were dealing with such tiny mites, we did our utmost to clean every square inch of the room. As an aside, we have a cat at home. She's the nervous type that likes cleanliness, and she always slept on my bed during the day. But when those birds were living in the roof, she started sleeping somewhere else. Maybe she actually realized that the mites were coming down from there. And for our last story, or rather set of stories this week, we're looking at a creature that has become something of a mystery over the years, something that people are still discussing to this day. If you're interested in learning more about this one, I recommend checking out Bankai, Baffling Japanese Internet Mysteries Volume 3, which explores the truth behind this one. But first, let's delve in and uncover a little of this creature with SOS Begins. Well then, it's about time we get to the topic at hand. This might get a little lengthy, so please forgive me. Either way, there's something I have to get out, and I believe it's a worthy story, so I'm taking up my pen. The year was 1986. There's no point to this story if I don't use real names, so this is a personal experience of mine from Yamada Daini Elementary School in Sendaioka, Osaka. If any of my classmates happen to see this thread, the word SOS will no doubt make them feel nostalgic. There was a scary story that was popular amongst the children at Yamada Daini Elementary School at the time. It spoke of a ghost called SOS who appeared in the old school building. No, maybe I should more correctly say, it kept appearing. Anybody could see SOS. The old wooden school building was surrounded by the new school building in a C shape. And there it was, on the other side of the frosted glass on the second floor of the east side. A woman by the window with her gaze cast down. A woman's face with long hair. Anybody could clearly see her at any time. She was the ghost we called SOS. The truth behind this ghost was silly. It was a fantastic painting left behind by one of the graduating students. It was framed and left by the window of the art prep room in the old school building. And so she was always there, looking down at the ground with a gloomy look on her face through the frosted glass. That summer, M, K, and I visited the school during the holidays and played on the small hill on the school grounds. I remember it was shortly before evening. We were tired from playing and sat down on the hill to chat when M suddenly suggested we go have a look at SOS. This was nothing more than a regular game that students from Yamada Daini Elementary played all the time. We cut across the school grounds, now bathed in twilight, and made our way towards the courtyard. I don't feel confident in writing with a child's vocabulary, and it's not like I remember the conversations word for word, so the following is a liberal translation. "Hey, look!" M screamed the moment we reached the courtyard. He didn't need to scream. Our faces were already frozen the moment we saw it. SOS was moving. Behind the frosted glass, SOS was moving. We could clearly tell it wasn't somebody moving the frame. SOS's face was clearly moving. We froze at the suddenness of the situation. "Wah!" we screamed. To be frank, up until that point, we thought it was nothing more than a bit of fun. But the next moment, we were in for a frightful scare. SOS's face turned to look right at us through the glass. Then, just as we thought the face had disappeared, the rattling of a door opening came from the empty art prep room. "Is SOS coming this way?" Someone, maybe me, said unconsciously, but those words terrified us. At the same time, we could sense a presence right under our noses, coming quietly down the stairs. "Wah!" The three of us took off running towards the schoolyard. The grounds behind the school had an exit that led to the shopping district, and during the summer holidays, it was left open. We ran towards it as fast as we could. When we got there, I turned around and saw it. A woman staring at us from the passageway next to the school building that led to the courtyard. I saw her. Her body oddly twisted and reminding me of a bird.
"Yusuke-san! Yusuke-san!"
She screamed twice, and then she turned around and disappeared. The voice reminded me of a large parrot, and I ran away from there as fast as I could. I will reveal that my name is Yusuke, but even now, the fact that she knew my name doesn't clear up a single thing about this story. Is the insane SOS still there, even now? Is there anyone here who knows of Yamada Daini Elementary School in Sendioka, Osaka? Do you know anything about SOS? This story was followed up several years later by a seemingly unrelated person also looking for the truth. How many people has this creature haunted? Find out more in SOS, Please Stop. What I'm about to tell you now isn't to introduce you to a ghost story, but rather to bring it to the attention of those who were involved at the time. That's why I'm going to directly mention the places and times involved, but at any rate, I'm writing this because I want to reaffirm what really happened back then. This happened in 1984. I went to Naninani Daini Elementary School in Sendioka, Osaka Prefecture, and we had a sort of ghost story there that I'd never heard at any other schools. It was called SOS, Please Stop. There was a creature lurking in our school. I remember everyone thinking it wasn't a ghost, called SOS. Kids were always going on about how you could run into him by the small door at the rear of the gym, or in the old home economics room at the rear of the second floor of the old school building. One day, the school was in an uproar when I arrived. "SOS's footprints are on the ceiling!" There was a building next to the old school building that was like a storehouse with a tin roof, and apparently SOS's footprints had appeared on the ceiling there. The ceiling area was rather open and about two stories high, and right around the center there were two or three footprints. That reminds me, last July, 2007, I visited the Expo Commemorative Park with my wife and child, and on the way back, we stopped by Sendioka and the elementary school I went to as a child to have a look. The school was still there, unchanged. "Oh yeah, SOS's footprints were there, huh?" I said half-jokingly as I turned to the old storehouse and looked up at the ceiling. But creepily, it wasn't just a childhood memory, and as I looked up again, those footprints were still there. I could clearly see them with my grown-up eyes, meaning they really did exist, and they're still there, even now. That's what made me remember what happened back in 1984. The memories came back to me clear as day, and from the bottom of my heart, they terrified me. One day during class, I heard a bunch of students making a fuss out in the hall. Everyone in class started talking as well, but we were in the middle of a lesson, so the teacher got angry at us. During the break after, a student from another class burst in, all excited. "SOS appeared! He's still there! Come on, check it out!" The whole class, no, the whole school went crazy. "Where?
the second floor hall. I looked out the hall window at the old school and SOS was on the second floor.
Everyone ran towards the hall, screaming and making noise. Several teachers tried to tell everyone off, but there was no way to contain the strange excitement that everyone felt at that moment, so there was nothing the teachers could do about it. I got swept along with the crowd as well, and then finally we reached the long hall on the second floor.
Over there! It's SOS! It's SOS!
The other side of the old home economics room window was dimly lit, but we could still clearly see through it. And inside was SOS. He had a large brown face and square shoulders. Strangely, he looked back at us with restless black eyes. Some students cried, others screamed, and some got all worked up and yelled at the old school building.
"Damn it! I'm gonna go over there and kill him!"
Before long, everyone started screaming.
"SOS! Please stop! SOS! Please stop!"
This was one of the rules from the SOS story. If you run into SOS, you must scream, "SOS, please stop! Otherwise, he'll kill you." Everyone was half panicked and screaming, "SOS! Please stop!" towards him. I screamed as well. SOS stared at us with his giant brown face pressed against the glass. I'd never in my life seen anything like it before, but I was sure that I wasn't seeing things either. I saw some of the students who went running out before start knocking on the door to the old school building.
"SOS, get out here! I'm gonna kill you! Get out here!"
Now, in 2008, I'm writing this story earnestly. I truly hope that someone who went to Nani Nani Daini Elementary School in Sendioka, Osaka, and saw SOS that day, will see this post. What on earth do you think that thing was? What happened after that? Did SOS ever appear again? These aren't the false memories of a child. It really happened, and I'm not writing here to fool anyone. Those footprints that still remain on the ceiling, that large brown face on the other side of the glass, and the quiet black eyes that stared curiously at us. What on earth was that thing? And is it still there? As summer approaches, I find myself wanting to go over there again on a whim on hot Sunday mornings. Like those students who ran out of the building, I want to run over to that door and open it to scream, "I caught SOS! He's really real!" I want to tell all this to the other kids who were there with me in 1984. If you are one of those people, then I'll leave you with undeniable proof that I was also there. Nani Nani's tires. Sorry if my phrasing and the riddle at the end is annoying, but this is something that I truly experienced. And finally, the truth is revealed. Or is it? Find out what this creature supposedly really is in SOS Please Stop, The Truth. I'm here to tell you the truth about SOS from that previous thread. I think I'm right in assuming this story is about Yamada Daini Elementary. SOS's true identity was a student from our generation. This boy went missing for a whole day and was locked in the boiler room or something behind the gym. If you lived in the area at the time, I'm sure you remember the citywide search for a lost child. But then again, maybe you don't. And the child they were looking for was the boy who became SOS. Apparently, he was playing after school when a high school boy locked him in the boiler room, and he couldn't get out. He left a message on the back of the door that he carved with a stone. S-O-S. Writing it like this makes it sound like the boy died, but he was fine. Anyway, it was unclear in the end who, if anyone, was at fault, but the SOS message and the image that some mysterious man had kidnapped him
led to the students growing fearful. And because there had been a fire at the gym previously, people connected those, and the story of the monstrous SOS was born. And the climax of the SOS story, with the mysterious face appearing in the old school building, well, that was a gift that a graduating student before me once made for a Christmas party. It was a picture about 1 meter long that he painted brown on cardboard. Still, that thing was pretty creepy, so it might have been frightening to see it through the frosted glass. Janitors regularly cleaned the old school building, so maybe they placed it against the window when they were cleaning sometime, and that's why it seemed like it suddenly appeared or was moving. Anyway, that's it. Did I destroy your dreams? Don't forget to check out Bankai, Baffling Japanese Internet Mysteries Volume 3, out on Amazon right now, especially if you want to know more about the SOS stories. And check out our newly revamped merchandise store at koabana.store. And if you'd like to chat about this week's stories, come and join us in the Koabana Discord. You can find that link in the description or on koabana.net. You can also check out our Patreon at patreon.com/TaraA.Devlin for exclusive bonus stories and extras, or our YouTube channel at youtube.com/KoabanaJapan for all sorts of Japanese horror you won't find anywhere else. Thanks, guys. Stay safe, and I'll see you again next time for even more Koabana, true Japanese scary stories from around the internet. Want even more scary stories? Head over to koabana.net for new translations every week. You can also join our Patreon for exclusive stories you won't find anywhere else. Head over to koabana.net now.